From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. This Sunday is Mother's Day in North Carolina. That means brunch, flowers, maybe a picnic, some homemade cards. In the Triangle, it might mean UNC or Duke graduation. We all have our associations with Mother's Day and what it means to appreciate our mothers and our mother figures, and how we show our love and to say thanks. So we ask the question today, what is motherhood these days, and what will you be doing to show your appreciation this Sunday? In a moment, we're going to speak with a group of North Carolinians, all mothers, about their roles and jobs as mothers, and what they appreciate and cherish, and what they struggle with. And we'd like to hear from you as well, mothers or not. What is motherhood like these days? How has it changed since you were a child? And we welcome your calls and emails. Calls 877-962-9862, emails sot@wunc.org. First, Amy Thiemann joins us in the studio. She is the author of Mojo Mom, Nurturing Yourself While Raising a Family, which has become a website as well and an interactive project. She runs Spark Seminars and provides parents with child safety training. Amy is also a member of the North Carolina Public Radio WUNC Community Advisory Board. Amy, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here, Frank.
You have been traveling quite a bit and speaking to young women about what you call truth in motherhood. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that many women today find that there are a lot of surprises with motherhood in the sense that our preparation can be incredibly unrealistic. And my goal with Mojo Mom and the talks I give is to help women really get a sense of what's really going to happen to their lives after they become moms, because you can literally read 1,000 pages of pregnancy and child-rearing books that really don't address what happens to your own life.
Have those expectations become more realistic, more difficult for women now that there are more options? Is that part of why it's those expectations have changed?
Well, I feel like every generation of women really needs to discover this for themselves. And I mean, in fact, that's kind of part of the problem, is women have been figuring this out and figuring it out through, you know, through feminism, through the 80s, the 90s, now in our current era. And we haven't always given a preview to the women coming up behind us about what they should expect and what they should be thinking about when they're young. So every generation has its challenges. But I think that my generation of mothers who are in their 30s and early 40s, we're the first generation who was surprised that we were actually going to have to deal with this, because growing up in the 70s as young girls, when you're a six-year-old in the feminist movement and it's presented to you as a done deal, you kind of tend to believe it. And then when you grow up and find out, hey, it's our turn to pick up the mantle and take this forward, I think we had a little bit of shock there.
So when you travel around and you meet with young mothers or prospective mothers, what is their expectation about motherhood?
Well, you know, if you think about college-age women in particular, one of the big problems is these women are making choices that will affect their entire life path at a time when they are as far removed from the daily demands of family life as you could possibly imagine. If you're living in a dorm, someone else is cooking for you, someone else is cleaning the bathroom, you're not with young children. And so I really want to give a wake-up call to young women about the kinds of things they can be thinking about even when they're still in college.
Such as
designing a career path that has a bit of flexibility built into it. I would never want to discourage any woman from pursuing a particular career, but you really need to go into it with your eyes open. Realize that careers with built-in timetables really work against you when it comes to having a family life. I spoke last year to a group of my classmates at my 15th college reunion and asked them how things were going. And it was really the women who had been really in a career that has a definite track, partner track, you know, residency track, tenure track. Those jobs are really hard to juggle a family and a career. So to me, the antidote, the positive thing I can talk to young women about is, you know, taking your career into your own hands to some extent. And I think entrepreneurship is a skill that every young woman needs to develop, so that if you need to get off the track, you can reinvent yourself on your own.
Still, it seems a lot to think about if you're talking about 18, 19-year-old young women who are just beginning to figure out what those careers might mean, what it might mean for them, whether or not their talents and skill sets even apply to those fields. And then you throw in this wrinkle, which is probably well advised. Hey, think about whether you want to be a mother, because some of these careers don't offer you much time.
Well, the great news in this day and age is that I think entrepreneurship puts everybody in a good stead. We've really gone from the 40-year career of one company track to people doing startups, people wanting flexible work arrangements for cultural reasons. And the great news is that ties right in to what women need and men. I don't want to leave men out of this. The good news is a lot of men want flexible careers and work arrangements as well so that they can spend time with their families. But I really emphasize entrepreneurship and business skills with women because I think a lot of us wouldn't think of adding that into our curriculum unless we made a conscious decision to do so.
Talking about what it means to be a mom today, my guest at the moment, Amy Thiemann, who is the author of Mojo Mom. We're taking your phone calls as well, 877-962-9862, 877-962-9862, if you want to join the conversation, SOT@WUNC.org. What did you expect as a mother? And did you decide, had you already known you were going to be a writer and a mother at the same time when you were in college?
No, not at all. I've had a really winding career path, but in the process, I think I've really discovered what I really want to do, which is to be a writer and a teacher and combine my interest in education, which was my previous career, with Mojo Mom. I get to teach, you know, through giving seminars and speeches instead of getting up in front of a classroom every day, but it's really channeling that same mojo, you know, finding a new outlet for it.
What did you expect going in?
Yeah, what I expected. It's kind of embarrassing to say because I bought into the fantasy that somehow my life would kind of continue on as normal, just with this baby in the corner. You know, that I would get pregnant when I wanted to, deliver on time, so I could go back to my job after summer break. I thought I was still going to be in control of my life path. And then when my daughter arrived, I realized that one of the great lessons of motherhood is you really have to realize that you have to give up a certain amount of control and make peace with chaos. But what I want to say also about that is I spent a little time beating myself up on a personal level, just wondering, why did I have this fantasy? Why was I so clueless? And what I realized is that's the fantasy that is sold to all of us. It's not just a personal thing. It is a cultural thing. And I like to say that, you know, pregnancy can be a very romantic time, and the pregnancy marketing juggernaut is like the wedding juggernaut, where, you know, when you're pregnant, it's like being engaged and you're preparing for your wedding, you're preparing for the big day, and maybe you're not even thinking about the rest of your life, what happens the next day. And that's the same thing with having a baby.
Well, where did that fantasy come from? Is that an outgrowth of feminism, or had that always been what you would describe as perhaps a misplaced or a distorted fantasy?
I think it's actually an outgrowth of consumerism. And in the media, it's a lot easier to sell the concept of, you know, look at this cute diaper bag that Julia Roberts is carrying, and you should buy one too, versus if you saw Julia at 3 a.m. feeding those twins, it would not be a pretty picture. So, you know, the reality, real life can be boring. It can be very unglamorous. And so we are sold literally on the fantasy.
What's hard about motherhood?
It's been an amazing challenge. When you have a new baby, it's very physical. You know, you really go back to basics. It becomes getting through the day with enough food, enough sleep, not enough sleep. And I think that the long-term sleep deprivation, the physical challenges in the first few months are something you really can't understand until you've experienced it yourself. But you should prepare for it with a support network who's there to take care of the new mother as well as the new baby.
That seems like the kind of thing that every young woman should know and from the beginning of time about motherhood. I mean, nothing has that changed much, that particular bit of wisdom?
No, the wisdom's the same, but we don't necessarily go into motherhood with that support network in place the way we would have before, with our mother, with our sisters, with our village right there to step in and help out. You know, it's pretty unconscionable, in my opinion, to leave a brand new mom home with a newborn baby from 7 a.m. till 6 p.m. by herself all day long. You know, and that is frequently what new moms are faced with. Not through anyone's fault, but just that we don't have that support network in place. So part of what I do in my work is encourage women to form that support network for themselves. Get yourself some girlfriends, some really good girlfriends, and learn to depend on each other.
Talking with Mojo Mom author Amy Thiemann today on the program and taking your phone calls as we talk about motherhood, 877-962-9862. Tina's on the line from Apex. Hi, Tina.
Hey there, Amy. I wish I would have read your book 6 months ago. I'm a mom of a new mom of a 6 month old, and I think what you're saying is right on target. But I think expecting 17 to 18 year olds and then, you know, 20 year olds to make those decisions early on is very difficult. You just don't have the capacity to understand, I think, what motherhood is going to be about. I mean, you're like you said, you're not there yet, but I think the support network is key, and it's been very key for me to surround myself with friends similar situations to me.
All right, Tina, we're losing you, but thank you for the comment.
Well, I do agree with her perspective, and what I'll say is it's never too early to start telling young women and men how they should start preparing, even if they don't hear the message right away. And it's also never too late to get that support network started. So what I found is if you can even get one really good friend who's in this with you, that is worth the world.
Do the young folks that you talk to seem surprised to hear these things, that they'd never thought about these possibilities and complexities?
I think they are surprised. And one thing that I think takes most people by surprise once they get there is also how your relationship with your spouse or partner changes. That's a tough one to preview, but it can tend to get back to Leave It to Beaver pretty quickly when you have a stay-at-home mom and a working dad, even if you had a really equal relationship up to that point.
Amy, I want to thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Amy Thiemann is the author of Mojo Mom, director of Spark Seminars. Just ahead, 4 Triangle Moms on the joys and sacrifices of motherhood, and more of your phone calls at 877-962-9862. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The Sunday's Mother's Day, 2006, and in many ways it will resemble Mother's Days of old. There will be flowers and meals out at restaurants or breakfast in bed. And while the celebration remains consistent year to year, motherhood itself is constantly changing. Joining us now on The State of Things for North Carolina Mothers, Jackie Shelton Green is a poet and writer, author of several books on poetry, a retired social worker, an activist, and mother of 3 grown children. Jackie Shelton Green, welcome to the program. Maria Mangano is a director of career services at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill Law School, the mother of a UNC freshman, and a daughter about to graduate from high school in Durham. Maria Mangano, welcome to the program.
Nice to be here.
Louise Jarvis Flynn is a freelance writer, the mother of a 1-year-old son, recently contributed an essay called 1+1+1 to the anthology The May Queen. Louise Jarvis Flynn, happy to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And Tiffany Edwards lives in Apex. She has 4 children, ages 11, 9, 5, and 4. Tiffany Edwards, welcome to the program.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
And we're taking your phone calls at 877-962-9862, emails sot@wunc.org on Mother's Day and your mother, talking about your relationship, or if you are a mom, how difficult it is, the challenges and joys of motherhood. So you all heard Amy Thiemann talk about the expectations of motherhood that young women should have today. What were each of your expectations, Jackie?
Oh, my. Well, my oldest daughter is 35, so I can't really talk about... Well, I could talk about
remember?
What it was like. What I remember most is, I think I should preface this by saying that I come from a pretty traditional Southern rural family, and was fortunate enough and blessed to grow up with women who were incredible, who my mom worked full-time. My 2 aunts were professionals in the education system. And we had my grandmother. We had a community of women. So there was this natural community that were the parents to all of the children. And I was listening to Amy, and I was thinking about younger mothers, and I interface often with younger mothers. I don't have grandchildren of my own yet, but I think the lack of that communal system, the village, is what's missing. And what I've done in my life as a mother is I've created community wherever I've lived, that it's just been a natural thing to do. I believe that there's something very powerful that happens in the gathering of women, and especially in the gathering of telling the stories and listening to the traditions. I adhere to many of the traditions, and I have broken many, many, many traditions. But having elders, having women who really emulate that it is possible to have a balanced, wonderful life, being a mother and being all of the other things that you want to do. As a writer, I wrote, I wrote probably my most productively when my children were very, very young. Mm. Because there was something magical about writing when they were sleeping, writing at 3 o'clock in the morning, getting up for that feeding and staying up. Of course, during the day, I was dragging. But having that balance, because I knew that that threshold of energy would be there. So and for me, it was sort of a stream of consciousness that you know, the motherhood actually fed and nurtured the other work that I wanted to do and the work that I've always done. I'm not a retired social worker. I've done lots of social work.
Okay.
But I retired from development and fundraising and from legal services. So as a single divorced mother of three, I had to be very creative and innovative about management of my time, about keeping my dreams and my all of the things that I wanted to do as a writer, in addition to being this great social activist, that it all, you know, one thing begets the other. So I think, though, that concentration is not there for young women. I don't think the family nuclear structure is what it was when I grew up, nor is what it's not what it was when I was raising children at a young age.
Well, I want to pursue this idea of community. We can get back to expectations at some point, and I'd like to do that. But this notion of community seems to be very much the center of the conversation. Often when we talk about traditional roles, the phrase nuclear family, you know, is part of that discussion. It's part of that sentence. But what we're hearing is that without a support network of some kind, it's very difficult to manage both a career or to just to be a mom, whether you're going to not, and I don't mean just in a dismissive way, but if you have decided to stay at home and not have a career, all of those things are more difficult without the support community. Is there something about the nuclear family that can be translated or transposed over an idea of a nuclear community, of a larger community, that could be very helpful to women as they move into a more modern idea of womanhood?
I think you're absolutely right.
Tiffany?
Yes, yeah. As a mother of four and as a mom that does stay home, and I taught high school English for 4 years and had my own event planning business for several years after already staying home for several years. And during that time, I've really learned exactly what you're saying about having that support system. We, in fact, my husband and I moved back from Charlotte to come back to the Triangle area where we both grew up, just so that we could have another child. We had two in Charlotte. We had two while living in Charlotte. And when we decided to go for the third because I had difficult pregnancies, we decided that we would have to move back here in order to make that happen. And so we not only had our mothers and Ted's father here to support us, we had cousins and close friends, and we also have a wonderful church family that is very supportive and helps to take care of our children when we can't, and with values that we respect, and that they can have other siblings and pseudo-cousins to hang out and play with, and it really does make mothering a lot easier.
Maria Mangano?
You know, you're talking about community, and I'm going to sort of turn it in a slightly different direction. I'm an attorney, so is my husband. This is not a profession that is particularly friendly, I think, to motherhood or parenthood. And before I can even get to community, the thing that my husband and I were most interested in once we had children is how to give less of ourselves to our profession and our work, but still do it in a way that was fulfilling and important, so we had enough time and enough of ourselves left for our children. And since the profession doesn't hand it to you in any way, we had to grasp it. My husband's a solo practitioner. He worked 4 days a week for many years. I worked for a law firm 3 days a week. You know, I set up a certain arrangement with them, and we both made less money, mm-hmm. had less professional prestige, but the incredible, joyful rewards we had by having real, relaxed, unfettered time to spend with our children, we would do it 10 times over.
Was it a difficult thing to organize? I mean, it's an easy enough thing to say we'd like to spend less time with the profession, more time with the kids, but practically, how do you do that as a lawyer?
Well, you know, going back, just I don't have to go back quite as far as Jackie, but my kids are 18 and 17, and I come from a traditional Italian-American family. My grandparents were immigrants from southern Italy. They were peasants. I mean, they, you know, to say the least, had no experience with the issues involved with two career families. My own upbringing was very wonderful, but totally baby boomer traditional. My dad worked. My mom was home with the four of us. It was a, you know, a wonderful childhood. So my husband and I were trying to, how are we going to get some of those very wonderful things about the traditional upbringing, bring them into our own home, and still, you know, still have our careers. And this is in the 80s when we're doing this. And really, women had only been in the professional workplace in significant numbers about a decade. And I never had a mentor. I wish I did. I love mentoring younger women lawyers. And we had to make it up, Frank. We just had to make it up. How many days should you work? Mm-hmm. How many days should I work? How much money will that bring in? Gee, if mom and dad pick up the kids one day a week. I mean, it was, I won't say it was extraordinarily difficult, but it certainly wasn't something that the culture or the workplace had a template for us. We had to make it up, and we had to ask for it.
Now, Louise Jarvis Flynn, you're a freelance writer.
Yes.
So I suspect that gives you some more flexibility when it comes to managing your time.
It does, but these choices that you're talking about are exactly the choices that I think my husband and I made as well. I was in New York, and I worked as a writer and an editor there. And then we moved to Boston. And the decision when we decided we wanted to have kids was, you know, quality of life. What kind of parents did we want to be, and what kind of parents could we afford to be? And we realized that we wanted to move to a place where the quality of life issues were a little bit easier to settle. You know, some good public schools, affordable, real estate market, and an interesting community of people that would be a little bit more supportive to, you know, just this idea of being more flexible with work and family. And so we've been lucky in that we can, you know, divide up childcare and that sort of thing, but it's also complicated because there are times when we think, you know, gee, if one of us had an editing job, you know, the other one could stay home and be the supportive person to kind of, you know, help raise Calvin, and we have to balance it. And sometimes his work takes the priority, sometimes my work takes the priority.
It does sound like there are some, at times, mutually exclusive priorities, though. If you're talking about the importance of a network, having people who can support you in the hard work of motherhood, and then if you make the choice to have a career, you may have to choose one over the other. It's not a matter of compromising in some cases. Would you say, Jackie?
Well, when I lived in Connecticut with my former first husband, we were very blessed to live on the campus of a secondary preparatory school. And again, I had the community, and I had a network of other stay-at-home moms. We created a Montessori preschool on campus. We did a bartering child care service trade-off between each other. But I also, I cannot not think about growing up in a community where women did not have choice. It was not a privilege of choice. Many of these women were taking care of extended families, husbands who maybe lived away, who were railroad men, who traveled up and down the eastern seaboard, who shared food, who shared the caretaking of not only children but of elders. So, you know, now I have it on both sides, having grown up knowing that wisdom and strength and courage and faith and having a template of other women who've done it and who've done it very successfully. And then to flip that and be a divorced mother who has choices. It took me quite a time to make the decision, oh, my children are grown now. I can give myself permission to stay home and be a writer. And there was something inside of me tugging about this whole issue of security. Should I do this? Can I do this? But I think we have to talk about permissions as well, those inner emotional, mental, intellectual permissions that this culture sort of says, well, no, you can't do that.
Well, how much has that changed? You talked about your oldest being 35 years old, so you would not have been the beneficiary of the, you know, a feminist movement that had changed consciousness when you were beginning to make these decisions. That would have been happening contemporaneously with your career decisions and your choices to be a mother.
But there's always been feminists in my life. I mean, before the feminist movement mm-hmm. became commercialized, I've always known feminists.
Well, let me...
So, yeah, I mean, I had some of the benefits.
But let's go around the table and talk about whether or not you had to, you know, give yourself permission, whether that became easier in the last couple of decades.
Well, I think I've got my answer. I'm not sure it's the answer to your question. As we're talking here, I'm thinking about the culture and what I think we would all recognize as the good mom, bad mom mm-hmm. dichotomy. You know, good moms are unselfish. Good moms stay home with their children. You know, if you were a good mom, you wouldn't do this. You wouldn't want to work. You wouldn't want to go to your book club. You wouldn't want to get enough sleep. You wouldn't want to go on a weekend away with your husband. And, oh, gosh, I would like to think that we are moving into a place where we're less harsh on women and don't do the good mom, bad mom thing to them. But I think we all know it's still around.
Well, so. And I think it's, I think you're right. I think we are moving beyond that. But I think what's replaced it is a lot of sort of socioeconomic reality. I mean, when we talk about, for instance, making these choices about creating a more flexible career so that we can spend more time with our kids, we have to realize that, you know, there are health insurance concerns. There are all kinds of things now that are so many pressures within our culture that are preventing us from making those kinds of decisions, those kinds of choices, making it easier for us to have a career and you know, care for your kids in the way that you want to as the good mom.
In other words, having the luxury of choice automatically puts us in the province of fairly privileged middle class to upper middle class women, which is not the majority of people's lives. Mm-hmm. That's true.
And that does make a big difference about the kinds of choices you can make, wouldn't you think?
Yes, I think Tiffany? It does. I was thinking about the question that you threw out about having permission, giving yourself permission. And I think back to my history and that my mother was a divorced mom. I'm an only child, and she also took care of my cousin after when I was about 12. And so she had responsibility of both of us. She was a high school teacher. Worked addition to that, she also was working part-time waitressing mm-hmm. and things like that. Mm-hmm. So she had the responsibilities of not just working a full-time job, but having a part-time job as well, which meant that I was the typical 80s latchkey kid, but was totally happy in that. You know, didn't realize that society mm-hmm. would later say, oh, that's a terrible thing. You know, so, I didn't know. I was clueless. I was fine. Mm-hmm. I was happy. She did a great mm-hmm. job, yeah. I think. But what we chose for our family was very, very different in that I was working when I had my first child, and when I was pregnant with my second one, decided to start staying home because I knew, well, one, I wasn't physically able to work, but when he was born, I could have gone back to work and chose to stay home in part because it was ridiculous to pay for two children mm-hmm. to be in a preschool on a teacher's salary. I was basically paying for them to go to school, and so I wanted to stay home, and it was a great adjustment for us, for me to make, even though this idea of permission, I really had, I haven't ever asked my mom this question, but I wonder if she asked herself, well, you know, Tiffany, are you going to go back to work? I know other people have asked me that question. Well, you know, when your kids get old enough, when are you going to go back to work? And I'm like, I don't know that I'm planning to.
Yeah,
go.
But that does raise the question of expectations yeah. and whether or not you feel the pressure of expectations, both to be the good mom
right.
and also to be the modern woman who is makes choices and doesn't take traditional roles that are traditionally female. What kind of pressure is that, and where does that come from? How do you cope with that as a mother?
Well, I think it's a very smart young woman, and any age woman, who knows who she is and what she's capable of in her day. I mean, I don't believe that a good mom necessarily is one who stays home and is there all the time. I have friends who have said to me, you know, I need to work. My children really need to be with other people. I just need to be more productive. I can be far more productive taking care of them and being the good mom if I'm not with them 8 hours a day.
Very briefly, though, because we're coming up against a break here, but how do young women find out who they are? How do they learn that? Because there are so many messages and so many pressures coming from so many different places about what a woman should be, both from the media, from the academy. How hard is it to find out who you are and to be that sturdy?
I think that's one of the big jobs of your 20s. And this collection, The May Queen, is really about that. And it's about how these women coming into their 30s figured out by making a whole lot of really bad choices and mistakes, and also good choices and bad luck and good luck, just kind of stumbling along, end up at a point in their 30s with family and a career and kind of pulling it all together.
So we'll talk about how to pull those messages together and a little bit more about motherhood as we discuss that today in advance of Mother's Day. Jackie Shelton Green is with us, Maria Mangano, Louise Jarvis Flynn, and Tiffany Edwards. And we'll take your phone calls at 877-962-9862. On the state of things when our conversation about mom continues, stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio, talking this hour about motherhood, how it has changed, how it has stayed the same, and what makes it hard, what makes it a joy. With us today, Jackie Shelton Green, Maria Mangano, Louise Jarvis Flynn, and Tiffany Edwards, and taking your calls as well, 877-962-9862, SOT@WUNC.org. You know, we talked a lot about the pressures on women as they become mothers. Those pressures really reflect priorities in a lot of ways, social priorities, not necessarily the individuals. Do we as a society respect the role of the mother? Do we give it enough value? Do we place enough value on the role of being a mother? Tiffany?
I think that I know that 10 years ago when I started being a stay-at-home mom, especially as an African-American stay-at-home mom, it was a very different situation for me because there weren't a lot of stay-at-home moms in my neighborhood, and it was culturally a challenge for me because I couldn't find the support that I needed in order to be able to do things for me. Tiffany time is what I was in desperate need of. Yeah. But now I think that has just radically changed in that there are a lot of opportunities now. The co-ops like Jackie was talking about, and I think just lots of play groups and things like that help us to find time for ourselves. And I think it makes me a better mom to be able to find time for myself. But the other thing I wanted to say was about this idea of the society's pressures on us. And I try very hard not to buy into society's pressures on what I should be as a mom. And I think that my faith is instrumental in that, in guiding what I should and shouldn't do, what I should or shouldn't want for my children. And I think that the answer that you're looking for in the regards of, well, how do these young women learn what to do? I think that people that have told me recently that they were pregnant and expecting children, I said, the most important thing for you to do is to develop your personal relationship with God, and that will be what will help you with this journey. And I can't give a better piece of advice than that.
And so you may have found a successful way to resist those pressures, mm-hmm. but the question remains, do those pressures reflect a certain lack of value? Put the question another way, that as a society that we really don't place the value on motherhood that we do on more commodifiable, you know, professions.
Well, we talk a lot about it, and family friendliness is a watchword you hear a lot, but so many jobs, and this is certainly not just the legal profession, you know, you read the statistics and the demands of jobs, professional and not professional, in terms of how many hours people are working, how much vacation they're taking, are becoming more and more onerous. And in my own current job is working in career services, I have the wonderful opportunity to do for young women and young men, to talk to them about these choices, to really listen to what they have to say, to really empower them to make choices that are going to make themselves happy in terms of quality of life, and parenting is just one part of that. So I guess in my own day-to-day life, I'm trying to do my part to really support people who are either in the early years of parenting or hope to do it in the near future.
Let's go to the phones. Paula is on the line from Chapel Hill. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I have a quick comment. I wanted to say that I think the notion that feminism has created some kind of an unobtainable or unrealistic double burden for women is misguided, and that the problem is that the revolutionary potential of feminism has yet to be fully realized. Feminist demands for workplace accommodations for mothers or for parents in general in terms of childcare or the adjustment of professional tracks and schedules can pave the way for a greater equalization of both the burdens and the growth potential at home and in the workplace.
All right. Thank you, Paula.
I'll just say amen, Paula. And I'm still waiting for the revolution. So while I'm waiting, I'm just doing the best I can, you know, in the day to day.
Well, and there's a strong wing in among feminists that suggests that we do place more value and find a way to include motherhood and mothering in the gross domestic product, that we find a way to place a value on it, that we put in these other professions as well. 877-962-9862 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation. Let's go to Chapel Hill, where Pearl is on the line. Hi, Pearl.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just calling because I'm a stay-at-home mom. I have a 20-month-year-old, and I'm also a working mom. I work out of my house, and I was wondering if any of your guests might be able to give me some advice on how to multitask, I guess, to the maximum potential, because sometimes I work about 15 hours a week if I'm lucky, and then I'm a mom the rest of the time, and I don't really feel like I'm doing that great of a job at either task. And it's great to have the opportunity to take care of my son, but at the same time, I'm feeling a little bit lost sometimes trying to do both.
All right, well, hang on the line, Pearl, and we'll see what kind of advice we can get you.
I don't know if I can give advice because I do the same thing.
I
can understand your feelings about this. It is very hard, I think, to work from home while you're taking care of your child, because it's so hard to switch gears. It is so hard to say, okay, 2 hours, I'm going to be my professional self, and then I'm going to just slip right over into, you know, reading Sheep in a Jeep for the 12th time and then go back. It can make you feel kind of crazy. And it can also make you feel like you're not doing either job well. But
I do feel that way.
But I think, you know, it's the fact that you're still doing it is a testament to the fact something's working.
Yeah.
So
It's definitely working, and I'm hoping that as my business grows, you know, and he gets older, things will get a little bit better.
Well, good luck.
Thanks, Pearl. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for taking my call.
I've heard this very often, and Pearl has someone on her knee talk about multitasking. I don't think I could do the show with a kid on my knee, although at times it may help. The idea that I've heard, what Pearl expressed is something I've heard a lot of mothers say, is that they tend to feel like they're doing neither job well, working mothers anyway. You never hear men say that, and in this era where men are supposed to be a little more conscious of their role at home and as caregivers, and some men are, I rarely hear that among men, that they're not as good a father as they could be when they're dads, and then it's hurting their work life. Is there something in the wiring here that makes women feel more responsible for both?
Oh, I think there's no question about it. And of course, where does that come from? The culture, our families, like all kinds of places. But at least I think one of the solutions is to go back to community. You know, your husband, your best girlfriends, go out with them and, you know, tell each other how great you are and how wonderful your children are and how much you love them and how you're doing the best you can. And, you know, that's what it's all about, and try to shut out the message.
It does seem to me, though, that if you're trying to balance both, that could make isolation an even easier thing for you. In other words, no time for friends. If you're trying to work and be a mom, the last thing you can do is network, where you might find some vitality and some refreshment.
I think that planning time for yourself is a really important part of making you a better mom and a better wife. And I found that strategy. Every month I have my book club meeting and, you know, Bible study and things. And I think that certainly makes me a better Tiffany. But in addition to that, I think that it's also important for us to, I think at this time, the kids are so busy with so many different things, I think we have to prioritize better. As a stay-at-home mom, I find that I'm just as busy as when I was working, and people find that extremely hard to believe. But if you do what you say you're going to do, and you volunteer in the classroom, and you take them to other extracurricular activities, and you do things in the community, and all of this, then your 9 to 5 or 8 to 4 goes extremely fast.
It's more like a 12-hour day than an 8-hour day. Yeah, Jackie.
But I think in our culture of making lists and keeping that calendar sort of the deity you were talking about a few minutes ago. When my children were very young and I was divorced, when I walked into the house, it was my time. And it was understood that for 20 minutes, Mom did not talk to anyone. I went to my bedroom. I sat on the edge of the bed. Sometimes I just laid there looking at the ceiling. Or I turned on music, or I opened my mail. But for 20 minutes, that's all I required. Just give me 20 minutes to sort of show up as mom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm coming out of the car into the house. I'm not mom right now. So I need,
you need to make
20
that
minutes.
Transition.
And those
20
minutes were built into that. And I mean, I would put on my calendar. I was very mindful and purposeful that I was worthy of a life, even as a mom, even as a divorced mother. And I guess I had a mom who would say things like, you know, you need to take a weekend and just go away. You just need to go to a hotel, pamper yourself, and read. And now, as I'm in the grandmother years, though I don't have any grandchildren, I find that I'm very, very involved in the lives of younger women who have children. I'm sort of a nanny to my publisher and her partner's children. I have 2 small children next door that are in and out of our home. So I think one of the most valuable things that women my age, or women who have raised children, can do is to show up in the lives of women in the community. Mm. Is not sort of have the attitude of, been there, done that, I've done it, I don't have to do this anymore, but to really be a part of the fabric of that tapestry. I mean, if I want children to be a certain way when I'm 80, then I certainly should be contributing to helping them have the integrity of personality and character.
They're going to be doing the math on that Social Security check, so they better come up right. That's
right.
The way I look at it. Let's go to Jake in Hillsboro. Hello, Jake.
Hey there. First of all, I got to say that my wife's already told me that I can't get up with my best girlfriend, but as you just said. But I like to say that I guess I'm blessed that I have a mojo grandma. I got mojo aunts, and I just like to say that for all the mojo moms out there, us men kind of expect it to be mojo all the time. And when we come home, we're kind of on the same page.
You're a dad?
We know what you're going through, and by golly, just...
Oh, I'm afraid we lost Jake. I'm very sorry. But do we feel that way? Do moms feel... Is there a partnership between moms and dads?
Yes. Oh, I mean,
days?
I think that's essential.
Yeah.
It's essential, and it's like the great thing. You know, it's you've got a spouse, and you're wonderful friends, and raised. I mean, we're talking about the difficulties in raising children and having a career, but the fact is, it's great fun. I mean, this is the stuff of life. This is the important stuff. You know what Freud said: work and love, and that's, you know, I guess he didn't throw in kids, but he should have. The partnership is essential, and that's what keeps you from, you know, going nuts. And frankly, it's the thing that, you know, kind of makes you want to have even a larger family and continue to throw more chaos into your world.
Well, does it? I'm wondering if the publicity, the fact that that we now have put lie to the myth of the supermom is beginning to scare women off. Do you think that motherhood is too scary a prospect in the modern world?
Gosh, I hope not. I mean, you know, I like what you just said, Louise, and our hour is running down, and, you know, I don't want it to run down without my saying that, you know, my marriage, my wonderful husband, my 2 fabulous children are the things that have given me the greatest joy in my life, and that's no hoke at all. Mm-hmm. I think even if some of us say negative things about motherhood or that it can be difficult at times, the thing that knits us together as mothers, the tremendous love we have for our children. In that way, I am no different than my peasant grandmothers in Italy or my baby boom era stay-at-home mom. I mean, we're talking a lot about how things are different, but that's the same.
Well, how much, let's stick with that idea. How much do you feel a connection with the whole idea of motherhood? Motherhood is an ancient profession in a modern world. Can you stay connected to that idea of the oldest ideas of and responsibilities, traditional responsibilities of motherhood? Tiffany?
I think that it is still a very traditional job, although we've added on a lot of new responsibilities. So I think that now there's just a balance of the two, and I think that our society is adjusting to us being able to either be working moms outside the home or working moms inside the home or just stay-at-home moms that don't work at all. So I think that being a mother and staying connected to our kids is I know that my mother's a working mother as a divorced mother. She wanted to be connected to me. She was doing what she was doing because that's what she had to do in order to provide for us. And now that I'm home with my kids and I have the four of them and that I'm taking care of them, this is the way that our family has chosen to nurture them, and it works for us. I love the fact that all of you have made different choices for your families and that it's working and that the children are thriving.
Let's go back to the phones. Carrie is on the line from Raleigh. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. I just wanted to comment a little bit on what the original speaker, Amy, was saying about planning out a career path for young women that could accommodate motherhood. I got some good advice to have children while I was still in graduate school, which I did. I had twins 17 months ago, and that has really worked out well for me. I was able to take some time off, about a year, to raise my kids, and things were financially tight, but we managed, and now I'm able to start my career and, you know, feel good about putting them in a child care situation now that they're a little older.
All right. Thank you, Carrie. So the idea is that there are certainly many paths, and that's so when you think about the complexity of all this and you look back to the mommy wars as a kind of controversy and as a kind of media device, way to talk about this, have we oversimplified the question for modern mothers, you know, stay-at-home mom or professional mom, and are we doing a disservice in the media in the way we frame the question about what motherhood is in the modern era?
I would think that the one disservice maybe we have done is to not emphasize enough the power of instinct in all of this. I don't think I'm alone in being of the generation that everything I know how to do I learned through research and books and reading and preparing and taking notes. And, you know, all that just goes out the window completely. And I had never really had to rely so much on just my own kind of instinct for things. And it's worked out, and I'm kind of shocked. And I think that is something that can be heartening for women thinking about having a family or who have younger children. You know, something does kick in, and that thing kind of helps you keep it all in the road.
Well, we're going to have to leave it right there. Louise Jarvis Flynn, thank you very much. Freelance writer and a mother of a one-year-old son, recently contributed an essay to 1+1+1 that was an anthology called The May Queen. Tiffany Edwards lives in Apex. Her husband and four children, ages 11, 9, 5, and 4, all live together. Tiffany, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Maria Mangano is the Director of Career Services at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill Law School, the mother of a UNC freshman and a daughter about to graduate from high school in Durham. Thank you, Maria.
It's great to be here.
And Jackie Shelton Green, writer, mother. Her most recent book of poems is called Breath of the Song. Jackie, thank you very much for being with us. And thank all of you for listening today to The State of Things. And thank my mom, Rita Stacio. Whatever you think of me, it's not her fault. Our show is produced by Megan Davis, Katie Barron, Robin Copley's our technical director. Thanks for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio.